interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
A confirmed attack is taking place against the United States. Aliens from an unknown location have been reported in multiple states in the United States.
When the lights go down, the paranormal comes alive.
There's not an alien force already among us.
Major sighting here. There's something out here.
Can you repeat that command, Bell?
It's coming at me.
Dark depths of a secret dungeon deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. You're traveling somewhere between abnormal and paranormal into the paranormal.
We are controlling transmission.
Welcome back. You know, I love Halloween, friends. There's just something to it. I know what it is. It's that time of the year when everything that we talk about all year is suddenly cool again. You know, Halloween is certainly wildly popular, and there's no sign that it's going to slow down. You just look at the numbers, how much people spend on the holiday year after year. Now, whether or not they actually believe in this, more people actually openly admit to opening their minds to these subjects this time of the year, which is certainly exciting. You know, everybody wants to dress up and go to a party, and for some of you, get drunk, and that's just what the holiday has turned into. A poll of Americans on whether or not they believe in ghosts and demons and other supernatural beings have found that more than 1 in 5, or 22%, say that demons definitely exist, while slightly more than 24% believe they probably exist. The numbers are similar when Americans are asked about ghosts. 20% say they definitely exist, and 25% say probably. As far as, well, what they're more likely to believe in, 45% of people say they believe in ghosts, 45% say they believe in demons, 46% say they believe in supernatural beings. 13% only believe in vampires. Tonight on the program, we have got one of the most gruesome, one of the notorious murder cases of our time, which happened on August the 8th, 1969. Charles Manson's family descended on Roman Polanski's residence on Cielo Drive in Beverly Hills and brutally murdered five people, including Polanski's wife, actress Sharon Tate. Now, while the original house no longer exists, filmmaker David Oman built his house a mere 150 feet from the site where those grisly murders took place. 30 years after, in 1999, Oman and his father started to build the house. Blood, sweat, and tears investment into this property. And since he moved in, paranormal activity has been quite apparent, so much so that the Oman House has been on nearly a dozen paranormal reality shows. Oman is convinced that the murder victims still haunt his residence to this day, and he's not the only one. Paranormal experts and psychics from across the world have visited the residence and have experienced firsthand the paranormal activity that occurs there. Now, on the 50th anniversary of the Manson murders, David is here to tell the truth behind the aftermath of that horrible night, which he writes about in his book, Ghosts of Cielo Drive, The Aftermath of Sharon Tate and the Spirits of the Oman House. David, welcome into the paranormal.
Well, thank you for having me on this time of year. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm guessing that the consensus among those who visit the Oman House is much higher than 45% who believe in this stuff.
Yeah, I'd have to say they might come in with a bit of a doubt to their beliefs, and then they come in and they come out and they say, okay, I say, I don't know what to say, but I experienced something in your house that I've never experienced before with the paranormal activity. And I said, okay, well, that's interesting. He goes, no, I don't know how to deal with it. I had things happen there that, I mean, in one case, I don't have to say that people that are skeptical are, and I only say this in a sense to let people understand how it is that these spirits consider or construe the behavior of those that are skeptical. It's an affront. It's almost like an insult. And I say that because I personally am not part of that group of people. But I've had people that have come in that have said to me, oh, I don't believe in ghosts. And I can tell you three stories in particular with three different individuals through the years. The first one would be Charles Gold, which goes back to 2005. He was my key grip in my movie, House at the End of the Drive. And he was he's a South African gentleman that lives in Canada now. And he was working on the film. For 2 weeks, he was staying in the third level guest bedroom. Now, mind you, this is years, many years before any of the TV shows had come out here, let alone Nick Roth and Ghost Adventures in 2013 and that whole episode of what took place in that same bedroom. So this is one of the first incidents that really capped that room's active level. He tells me 6 months after we shot the film that he has some strange, weird experiences in that bedroom that he couldn't wrap his fingers around, and finally he's decided to tell us what happened 6 months earlier. And to this day, as he said to us, it still scares the crap out of him. And I was going to say, if you like, I can actually cue up his interview on my end. I don't know if that's interesting to your level. I do have it here. And it's interesting because he was the first person that was a skeptic mind that had an experience here that was stranger than fiction, let us say. Let me see, Charles Gould. Here we go. So you guys can hear this right from the horse's mouth.
One night when I was sleeping in this room during the production, I had a really weird experience. It's quite upsetting. I thought I was dreaming, and a strange man said to me something like, "You're coming with us," and I felt myself being dragged up to the back corner of this room really fast. And I remember saying, "Just leave me alone," and then becoming aware of my surroundings, and I was just sitting bolt upright in bed, feeling really scared, and I don't scare too easily, so it was a pretty weird experience, but I managed to settle down after that, and a couple of other weird experiences where I felt my feet being pulled in the morning at pretty much the same time on a few occasions when it was sort of time to wake up, and you know, there was nobody or nothing there. And I've always been very skeptical about anything to do with spirits or ghosts or hauntings or religion or, you know, superstitions or any of these kind of stories. But, you know, there must be an explanation for what I experienced. And it could be just a dream or a figment of my imagination, although it's not the usual type of thing that I go through or experience. So it's pretty weird, but I didn't say anything about it until somehow the story came out, and here I am, so sharing it with you for what it's worth.
That man had a life-changing experience, it sounded like, in your home.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, it took him 6 months to admit it to us and to tell me about it, and I was like, I said, "We got to get your interview." I said, that's crazy stuff you're telling me now. I said, "We got to get your interview. We got to get your interview." And he was dead serious. He was completely, like, there was no question in my mind what he was telling me was completely legit, to put it bluntly. He looked like he was shell-shocked from the experience. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. And the second experience that took place with somebody was, I had my a friend of mine's friend came over. He's a producer to take a look at my movie. So he's in the room directly next to that the guest bedroom, which is the theater room. And he's down there watching the movie. And I told him, I said, "Look, I'm going to go upstairs." I said, "You're thirsty, right?" "So am I. I'll go upstairs and get us something to drink." I go upstairs to the top floor to the kitchen and get something to drink for us both. About 5 minutes after I get upstairs and I'm just about to come downstairs, I hear the door to the third level shut, and I hear footsteps going up the staircase. And they're not like soft. They're like rapid fire footsteps coming up quickly. And I'm like, what the heck? The movie can't be. I said, maybe there's something wrong with the movie. You know, the DVD player jammed. He comes walking up, and he walks right past me in the kitchen and walks right outside into his car. And he starts his car, and I'm like, what the, huh? So I run outside, and I said, "Will you win?" I said, "What's the matter?" He goes, I don't know. And he's like almost like three sheets of white. And I said, "What's the matter?" He goes, I don't know. I was in your theater room, you know, and you went upstairs to get something for us to drink. I said, yeah, I was just about to come downstairs. He goes, well, and he starts losing it. You can hear it in his voice. He's quivering. He goes, something, I felt something or someone putting their fingers through my hair and up and down my back, through my jacket. I could feel this finger running up and down my spine. And I'm like, oh, my God, are you okay? He goes, I don't know. I've never had anything like that happen. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then all of a sudden I hear a voice, a name, or two people. Some voice comes in my head and it says, because it was his two friends that have passed away in the past 5 years. And I don't know this guy from Adam. I've never met him before. He's a friend of a friend. He was referred to take a look at the movie and see what he thinks. And I said to him, I said, I just heard you had two friends of yours that died in the past 5 years. And that's who it was that was reaching out to you. And he looks at me and his eyes pop open like, what the hell? And he goes, how do you know? I said, one of your friends died. I'm hearing in a mountain climbing accident? I said, it wasn't a really big mountain, but his anchor hook gave way and he fell down and he goes, yeah. I say, that guy died in a terrible car accident. And he looks at me, goes, oh my God. He goes, you. And he starts to the flesh color comes back to his skin and he sits there and he says, yeah, that's all very true. And he starts to calm down. I said, well, they're just letting you know that they're okay. And they wanted to let you know that they wanted to, you know, reach out to you and just, you know, try to let you know that they're around you. And he just about freaked out. He says, that's it. I got to go. And he left. And again, he was a skeptic because I said, when he came in, you know, the house is haunted. He goes, yeah, okay, right. Because look, I'm here to see the movie. I'm not really into the storytelling. He goes, that's great for marketing, but you know, that's what's most important is seeing your film. I don't care about the storyline and the backstory. That's not as important. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, and I'm guessing those two stories that we've heard so far are not the only ones, David.
Oh, no. Oh, God. No, these are ones that just popped up that I said, you know, I've never really talked much about the second story. I've talked about the first story once in a while. The third story, again, is one of those. All three of these stories are unique in the sense that there's a physical component to them. And more importantly, the three people involved were all skeptics. So it ties right into what we were talking about with the skeptics and the non-believers and the way that the non-believers are actually getting more attention and are not requesting it, but it's almost like they're spurning these spirits to like, you know, I just heard there's a challenge, the gauntlet's been laid down. Spirits don't exist. The spirits take offense to that and say, really, we'll accept that challenge. We'll let you know that what you're thinking is completely wrong and has no basis, and you should think twice before you make such across-the-board blanket statements about spirits and stuff, which is going back to what I was going to say earlier when you started talking about that poll. That poll is so stupid, and I'll tell you why that poll is so stupid. Whoever wrote the poll mixed two types of dynamics into one poll, which it doesn't make sense to me. You're going to ask a poll about spiritualism, then you ask a poll about spirit. You ask questions related to spiritualism. If you want to ask religious questions and religiosity pointed questions, go right ahead. But please, please, please don't try to commingle the two. I heard the same poll referred to last night in the podcast, demons and ghosts. Really? Excuse me. Who in the living hell came up with the semantics not to say one is one thing, one is another thing, one is another thing? They're all separate things. Demons, let me get this across to your audience. That is a religious functional statement. They're in spirituality. There's really no name calling of demons and the devil and Satan. That's a religiosity pointed area when you're coming from that. When you're talking about spiritualism, you're talking about a ghost, an apparition, or do you believe in the afterlife? Do you believe in reincarnation? Those are all separate points of context. They're not interrelated in the sense that a ghost is a reincarnated. Somebody that's reincarnated has to be a ghost first. No, not necessarily. Things reincarnation has to do with the karmic principles of the Hindu religion. Has nothing to do with ghosts. Ghosts are something that we on the Western side, the Western civilization side, believe in. In Hindu, ghosts are not considered the same things as we believe them to be. They're different. There's a different whole perception and perspective on that side. And that's a religious thing. Again, that's a form of religion. Because when you talk of karma and reincarnation, that's religion. That's not spirituality. People like to mix them up and cross metaphors and cross things. But the truth is, nobody wants to look at the truth and say karma is religion. It, no matter what you say, it was born from the Hindu religion, and it is religion. And the same with reincarnation. That's a religious functionality. Whether or not that happens for the spiritualist people that believe in spirituality, that could be, but it's not the same way that the people in the, when you talk about reincarnation with the Hindu twist, there's a whole process behind that. And you have to understand when you start to investigate and research what it is, there are processes in that religion that say how the path of reincarnation is to be, how it takes place. It's not like poof, you die, and then you're popped into another body. That's a westernized type of a take on reincarnation.
But this poll does give us, you know, a lot to talk about, because it got you to make that very important point. The poll also states that 1 in 10 people say that they have communicated directly with a ghost or spirit of somebody who has died. So my question to you, David, is have you had communications with these spirits in your home?
All right, when we say communication, I think the word's abused. Spirits we don't get to talk and have an we don't get to have communication with a spirit. What I mean is communication requires a two-way path, meaning point A and point B, two separate, individual one, individual two. Individual one speaks to individual two. Individual two hears that and responds accordingly. That's communication, back and forth. What they're talking about is one-way communication, meaning the spirit will appear and manifest and do something. That's one way. It's a one-way street. It's not going back and forth, meaning most of the time, people cannot talk to a spirit and have the spirit acknowledge and start talking back for one reason. As I've seen it, we are on one plane of existence. Let us just, for lack of better words, we're on we'll turn this into a dimensional discussion. We are on the third dimension. Two dimension or 2D is basically flat. So something on a piece of paper, it's two dimensional. Three dimensional means it has depth, height, and width. There are further dimensions beyond our own perceived dimension that we exist in the third dimension, that we, as I believe it, are overlaid with our dimension intermittently for a brief split second and a moment, and then it disappears. I don't think there's enough time for them to hear us because they're at a higher frequency, and it's almost like we're talking on an AM frequency and they're talking on an FM frequency. The two frequencies do not coexist, but they do not overlap. So there's no form of intermittent transmission between an AM radio station and an FM radio station. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, while we can't pick up those frequencies with our ear, some of these recording devices obviously can.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying to you. All right, here we have examples here. All right, after we discuss this about this VVP stuff, we got to go back to the one last story about the paranormal, the skeptics, and the physical reality of what happened with that last person. But in this case, what I'm saying to you is we've had EVP sessions or electronic voice phenomena or disembodied voices recorded responding to our questions. When we'd ask a question, we didn't hear anything, but the digital recorder recorded a response. That's disconjointed communication. Does that make sense? It's fragmented, meaning it's not instantaneous, like you're hearing me talk and you're responding. In that case, they hear us, then there's a response, but we don't get the response till we hear that digital recording. By the time that we hear the digital recording, they're already gone. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Okay,
their doorway is closed. Like I said, the doorway opens and closes at its own pace and peril, at its own pace and speed. The problem is it's not always open. That's why we don't hear more of that chatter on a regular basis, because it's not always open. It's not an open channel, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so go back and make that point that you wanted to make before I...
About the skeptics, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, all right, here's a story from about 7 years ago. There were three girls that were driving in a convertible that were stopped on the side of the road near my house. I drove up and I said, girls, do you need some help? And I said, we're lost. And it's like, okay. So they were looking at their stars, maps to the stars' homes. And they were trying to figure out where Rudolph Valentino's house was. And I said, oh, I said, funny, I live right across the way in next door to Sharon Tate's house. And my house has been on a bunch of TV shows dealing with the paranormal. And one of the girls said, and these were three Scandinavian girls, and they were in this convertible, so they were all sunburned. And they said, oh, we'd love to see your house. Oh, blah, blah, blah. So the one girl says to me, she goes, you know, I'm a skeptic. I don't believe in ghosts. And I said, okay, I don't care. It doesn't hurt me. I'm not offended. I said, however, you never know how the spirits are going to take that. And she laughed and thought it was humorous, and I was being cutesy. And it's like, yeah, I was being cutesy, but I was being honest, really. So they're in the house, and we're sitting at the bar talking. And the girl who says that she didn't believe in ghosts starts telling me, as her elbow is resting on the bar countertop, she goes, because your cat just brushed his tail against my arm. And I looked at her with this quizzical look, and I said, wait a second. I said, look where your arm is. I said, your elbow is resting on the bar counter. It's 4 feet high. I said, what do you think I have, a tiger?
All right. David, we have to pause there, but I'm going to let you pick up when we come back right after this. The Ghosts of Cielo Drive tonight with David Omen of the Omen House. I'm Jeremy Scott, traveling with you somewhere between abnormal and paranormal.
Into the Paranormal is streaming 24/7 on the TuneIn Radio app and at paranormalradio.com.
Homicide.
In a scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird religious rite, five persons, including film star Sharon Tate, were found dead at the home of Ms. Tate and her husband, film director Roman Polanski. Ms. Tate, who starred in Valley of the Dolls, was 8 months pregnant and was found stabbed multiple times in a white nightgown with a rope around her neck attached to the body of a man.
Two bodies inside, two bodies outside.
Among the other victims were Hollywood hairstylist Jay Sebring and coffee heiress Abigail Folger. Authorities would allow no one in an unofficial capacity to enter the posh Benedict Canyon property in the hills which overlook Los Angeles. When police arrived, they found the telephone and power lines cut. The bodies had been dead for about 12 hours. They were discovered this morning by the maid who ran screaming to neighbors. One officer summed up the murders when he said, "In all my years, I have never seen anything like this before."
You know that feeling when you just feel that there's a presence, there's somebody behind you or looking over your shoulder, and you just feel like turning around and looking, there's no one there. Well, needless to say, that was my first run-in with the spirits that I like to refer to as the victims of the Tate massacre from 1969.
Adam 1-9 confirmed multiple homicides at Beaumont location. Request detectives and coroner's unit, code 3.
Copy 1-9. To your request, ambulance unit.
Negative. Coroner only. We got a real bloodbath up here. Never seen anything like it.
Copy. Objective.
Searching for the truth. Asking the hard questions as we ponder what could be. You're traveling into the paranormal.
of Cielo Drive tonight. David Omen from the Omen House is here talking about the afterlife of Sharon Tate and the spirits of the Omen House. And he was telling this story involving an imaginary cat. David, please continue.
So the girl, I said to the girl, I said, what do you think I have, a tiger? Because my cat is about a foot to the back. His tail extends maybe another 7-8 inches. I said, but you're sitting there talking about a tail. It's touching you at 48 inches off the ground. I said, it's not my cat. And so we looked at her upper forearm. I mean, upper arm around her shoulder, just like 3 inches below her shoulder. Her skin was obviously kind of red from the sun because she's Scandinavian. And as we're looking at the bicep around her arm, you know, we see four fingerprints in white, as if, you know, when you grab something that's sunburned, there you push your fingers on, it turns white where your fingers have touched, where the pressure has been made on the contact. Well, no one had touched her. She was sitting there by herself. The other two girls were about a foot and a half away from her. And we see these four fingerprints dissipating in white on her bicep. She runs outside terrified and starts smoking a pack of cigarettes. I will never forget. I said, are you okay? She goes, I don't know. I don't know. I just...
Have another drag.
I don't know. And she's just tumbling over her words. She can't get her mind wrapped around what's just happened. She now has felt it, and she sees the physical affirmation that somebody has grabbed her arm when no physical being has. And I said, so now, see, still don't believe in ghosts, huh? And she goes, I don't know. I know what I saw. I know what I felt. Oh, my God. 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 And I said, gee, it seems as though people that are skeptical in some way, shape, or form manage to irritate, piss off, or get the goat of the spirits. And the spirit's like, you don't think we exist? Really? Well, let me give you a few pointers about we don't exist next time you make that statement and see if you like what you think you thought exists or don't exist. And it's amazing because I've seen a lot of other cases where people that come in, I don't believe, blah, blah, come out and go, okay, I don't know what I don't or do believe in, but I know what I had experienced. And it, to me, I find it very amusing in a sense that the spirits, you know, in a way, take offense to this, which means there's a sensitivity level to them, which, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, it's an obvious duh. There's a sensitivity level in the spirits because how can you explain what happened to Zach Baggins when they were here 6 years ago shooting Ghost Adventures in 2013 when they did the despicable reenactment of the pregnant Sharon Tate walking up the driveway covered in blood? You don't think that in some way, shape, or form tweaked the spirits of those that had died that night as well as Sharon's spirit enough to say, that's enough?
Well, of course it did.
You crossed the line. We are now thoroughly going to ream your rear ends and going to spank you something silly, and you deserve it.
Well, but David, it doesn't seem to have this effect on you because you're more respectful of these spirits, are you not?
Yeah, and I'd say most of the people that come to visit, you know, people that are friends of mine that are from Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, I have very, very seldomly seen anybody ever have such contempt and outright disrespect for those that are no longer living. And let's get this straight. It doesn't stop with the dead, the disrespect that these guys have. It continues into the realm of our existence, of the living. He dissed me on Twitter and made some disparaging comments about me. He wrote in his book 3.5 pages that I'm possessed and I share my body with other spirits. Such hogwash, I can't even tell you. I don't know where this guy comes from making these statements, but part of my reason for putting the book out there was to basically say, shut up, you stupid, pedantic poser, paraceleb at best. You have no credibility. You're a showman and a hack showman at best. You haven't any serious true interest in the paranormal. You just use it as a vehicle to cater to your gosh darn whims and your obsessions with this serial killer collecting and all that stuff. And let's be honest, after they left here, after their 3 hours tour of duty here at the house, was half of their allotted time, they were sick in bed in their hotel rooms for 3 days and three nights after they left the house. I'd have to say that that's a pretty substantial bit of information that you take back and you go, really? That's pretty impressive that the spirits were so offended by these people's actions and behaviors that they went out of their way to really, you know, kick them in the groin, so to speak.
Well, I hear that's their MO. We told the story of Keith Lindert up in Bothell, Washington, in his haunted place, and Ghost Adventures goes in there, and they're there for, I think, maybe a little longer than they were there at your place, but not much longer, and then they go on their merry way, and then they try to, you know, blame the homeowner.
That's the Linder house. I've heard about that story with Linder. His story, my story, and also Bloody Mary in New Orleans are three people that I know of specifically that have been run through the dirt and the mud because of Zach Bagans after the show aired. He's such a lily-livered chicken, it's not even funny. When you watch the episode that I'm on, he sends Nick, he sends Aaron, but he doesn't go put himself in the fray. Once he's in the fray and something happens to him, he runs for the hills and stays up in the hills way above the action and the fray, looking down upon it, you know, from a distance, safe and sound, using his walkie-talkie. You know, during that episode when they sent Nick downstairs and Nick was having his interaction with the spirit down there, which to this day I still can't understand why he didn't just walk out the door and up the stairs and out the house when that happened. I don't know. I was watching it firsthand with Aaron and Zach in the van, but I don't understand that. But the fact is, be that as it may, Aaron and Zach and Jay Wozley in the backseat of the van watching that taking place, what you see on the show is edited. They were he was down there for about 3 or 4 minutes, and he was having a time of it. And I said to them, I said, if you guys don't go down there and pick his ass out of there, I will break this contract that I have with you and screw your stupid little pedantic show, and I'll go down there and save him, because I don't play this kind of stupid screw your friend, let him hang type of behavior. I said, if that's my friend, I go and rescue him. I don't put him through the ringer to make him deal with it. I said, that's disrespectful, that's obnoxious, and you just don't get away with that in my house. This is my house. I said, I have respect for my friends, and if my friend's having a meltdown, I go and bail him out, whether it's perceived or it's real. Needless to say, he's experienced it. He's dealing with it. He needs to be assisted. And finally, then Zach goes, all right, we'll go down there. Come on, Aaron, come on, let's go down there. Let's get him. And I'm like, you shallow-minded, slope-brained moron. How do you treat your friends is a sign of how you treat people, which to me, you have no respect for others. You don't have friends. You use people and you abuse people. How dare you be so disrespectful? And I really had no respect for this guy after he left. When he first came, I said, hey, do you guys want to come by tomorrow on your day off and we'll barbecue here and we'll talk about the show, the story of the house and all this stuff? Because I figured, you know, we don't have time to go into detail. We've got a show to shoot and we have a schedule to maintain. And this piece of white trailer trash with his greased-back leather-clad jacket says to me, oh, no, I've got a chick flying in from out of town. And I'm like, you live in Las Vegas, man. People can fly into Vegas for $25 and go on a junket, and you could have your way with it there, and it doesn't cost a dime. But you're in L.A. to see this haunted house. You haven't been here in 4 days during the shooting, except for now. What kind of a real, true paranormal investigator are you that basically snubs me and says, no, I don't want to come back to your house and talk to you about the story of the house and get into detail and curiously and, you know, ask questions in detail about the house? No, because he's not interested, because that's not his curiosity. He's an actor playing a role, a pissant role at that. You know, that's to me the epitome of Zach Baggins. And poo on gosh darn TV Guide, the best paranormal show in the past decade. TV Guide can go, you know, pardon the expression, blew it out to its rear end. You know, what a joke.
David Omen, raw, live, in color, in the flesh, in the now, here on Into the Paranormal. He is author of Ghosts of Cielo Drive, The Afterlife of Sharon Tate and the Spirits of the Omen House. David, I want to know when your first encounter was with one of the victims and how you knew that that's who you had come across.
Let's see. It's about 15 years ago, 2004, mid-July. My mom is unfortunately dying or dealing with, at the time, pancreatic cancer and going through chemotherapy.
I'm sorry.
No, it's actually 15 years late. I appreciate it, but the sentiment is not important. I mean, the sentiment is important, but that's okay. It's literally history. And my mom was dying, was dealing with a cancer, and my girlfriend at the time was flying through the European continent with American Airlines. Probably mid-July, middle of the night, about 1:35 a.m., I go to sleep. And I say 1:35 specifically because I put my head on the pillow, and I remember looking at the clock, and it says 1:35. And I'm like, okay, that's early. Let's go to sleep. What felt like hours later, my eyes pop open. I turn and I look at the clock and it says 1:37. And I'm shaking my head saying, no, I feel like I've been asleep for 7-8 hours. So I wake up and I, for some reason, my eyes and my attention turns towards the foot of the bed. And I don't know why it did, but I look at the foot of the bed and about a foot off the corner, the left side corner of the bed, about 3 feet off the corner is a guy. And he's full bodied. The room is dark, but he is lit up. And when I say lit up, there's not like a light outside of him on him, you know, illuminating his body. He is light. He is emitting light from within. So he is standing there, and it's a full bodied person who looks like he's about 5'8", 5'9". Black colored hair, and it's parted on the side, and it's kinky. It's not smooth. It's kind of kinky, and it's parted to the left. He's wearing a short lapelled suit. He's appearing in all shades of gray tones. And what I mean is, in photography, if you look at sepia tone, it's all shades of brown. This is all shades of gray. Like his hair, like I mentioned, is black charcoal gray. His suit is a powder, like a powder dark gray. His shirt is a powder blue gray. His tie is a navy blue gray. It's all in shades of gray, which is tripping me out. But I don't recognize him as anybody that I've ever seen before physically. But I also look at him, and he is totally fine. I mean, if this guy was beaten up and hurt in life as he died, he doesn't look like that today in his appearance as a spirit. He looks fine. No gunshot wounds, nothing, no telltale signs to lead me to believe that this is somebody that died a violent death. So he's standing there, and had his left arm extended with his index finger pointing out, and he's turning from the waist up towards what I thought was the bottom of the driveway. And he did this 3 times and then vanished. And I said, what? Is my mom dead? What? Is Felicia dead? What's going on? What are you here to tell me? And then he vanished. So I started to think, and I said, I don't know what's going on. I said, I hope I don't get a call from my mother, my dad in the morning that my mom's just passed away in the middle of the night, or that I get a call from one of Felicia's friends that she died on the airline, you know, on a flight while she was in Europe. So I spent the next hour walking around asking, what the hell was that all about? What was that all about? And I go back to bed an hour later, and I wake up in the morning, and I call my mom and dad, and my mom's fine. 2 days later, I heard from my girlfriend she was okay. So it was about 6 months later, I was did some research on the book because I was starting to write the book that I literally just finished 3 weeks ago now. And I went to the LAPD to do some research to see if there are any photographs of anything related to the day of the murders that was left, discarded, or thrown on this lot. because there was nothing here at the time of the murders, and there never had existed anything until my father and I built this house. So I go through the photographs at the LAPD, and I come across an 8x10 photograph of Jay Sebring. And I said, oh, my God, that's the guy I saw in my room. I flipped the photograph over. It says Jay Sebring with his natural hairstyle. Sebring had coarse, kinky hair in real life. But since Jay was a hairstylist, a men's hairstylist in Hollywood, and the big thing in the 60s was straight hair for guys, he created a chemical hair relaxant to make kinky hair go straight. Kind of like you'd say it's an anti-perm type of a gel that he created that you could put in your hair and it would straighten your hair out straight across. That's what he created, and he had in his hair. But since he's now dead, he doesn't have access to that, you know, product. So his hair looks the way like it did in real life without the gel. That's when I realized it was Jay Sebring that I saw in my bedroom 15 years ago.
Yeah, and that's quite a story. Let's go back to how you came to live in this home. Safe to say that you and your father knew about the murders, but you necessarily didn't maybe know how close you were to this site. Is that an accurate statement?
No, let's be honest here. Everything that I've said about that has been kind of misconstrued and misappropriated. And I think it was because in one of the shows that I did, the producer said, look, you can't admit that you knew the Tate House was there. I said, what do you mean? I knew the Tate House was there because I was there in 1978 and 79 and 80 and 81. I said, how can you sit there and tell me I can't say what I know? He says, for the show's sake, we want you to say that you didn't know. It's like, well, great. Now I'm crucified for saying that some 12 years ago on a TV show. But the truth is, it started on late November, Sunday morning in 1998. 8 o'clock in the morning, my dad calls me up and gets me rousted out of bed to go take a look at a property that he found that's a foreclosure up in Beverly Hills that's uplisted supposedly for $40,000. And I am like, all right, I have my doubts, $40,000, it's probably a misprint, whatever. So I went on the whim, and I went there and I to the lot. And when I got up here, 10 minutes before he shows up, I started having flashbacks. And I'm looking down the street, three houses from where this lot is, which is 150 feet because the lot's only 48 feet wide, is this new construction. But I'm looking there and I'm saying, wait a second. I see where the pavement stops and now it turns into gravel like they've crushed the driveway, and I start to realize that's where the Tate murders took place. And I'm like, oh my God, I haven't been here in 20 years. How crazy is this? Well, 18 years at the time. And I said, I don't believe this. I can't believe this. Oh my God. So my father drives up in his Firebird and he gets out of the car and I said, Dad, that's where the Tate murders took place. You know that? And he goes, my father was clearly focused. He goes, I don't give a goddamn about the Tate murders. What do you get? Who cares? But we're here to look at a piece of real estate, a lot. Were you focused? Come on. And I'm like, oh, yeah. He goes, so what do you think of the lot? I said, well, it's nice. He said, it looks like they've got some caissons or they have rebar on the surface. And he said, that's the thing. I think that they started building and then the city stopped them. I don't know why, but I got to find out if this lot is what it says it is, and it turns out we can get this for steel, we can build this house on this property. And I said, okay. And my dad was thinking, build the house on the lot, sell it for a steel, and then you have money to go buy your own house, etc. And I'm like, Pops, you get that stupid thought out of your head. We build a house here, and you at 82, this is the last house you're going to be building. I don't think we're going to do that. I think I'm going to keep it. So 3.5 years later, we bought the lot in January of 1999, and we built the house. And it took about 3.5 years from the time we bought it to finish. And I moved in August of 2002. Now, during construction, stuff was happening here between my labor's experiences, my own experiences of just feeling, you know, that sense of not being alone. Walking around the property and up and down on the different levels while we're doing construction, it just had that feeling like, you know, we're here, we're watching, we're keeping an eye on you. Don't worry, nothing for you to be afraid of, and we appreciate you building this because we didn't have any place before. And I said, you know, if it wasn't for my father and my mother and I, there wouldn't be anything here for those spirits to occupy. So I stand firm on the belief that, you know, if you sons of bitches are going to sit here and hang out here, you better be goddamn respectful towards me and not try to scare me out of this place, because there is no way in hell I'm going to run. So we have to start off from, we're all on the same level playing field. We all have mutual respect for a mutual outcome, which is to each one's benefit. And that's how I've treated it ever since. So when spirits raise their little, let's say, obnoxious prankster selves, I shut them down and say, no, we can't do that. For instance, I once had an electric bill that was 3 or 4 times the normal electric bill, and I went ballistic. And I took the bill from upstairs, went down the spiral staircase to the second floor, marched my ass down the hallway to the cinder block wall area where the laundry room is, and I basically let out on a tirade to the spirits. And to this day, every time I tell this story, people go, no, you didn't. I say, oh, yes, the hell I did. You bet your sweet ass I did. I don't sit there and allow them to get away with that kind of slop and think that it's okay. Who the hell do you think? I said to him, I said, excuse me, I have in my right hand an electric bill from the LADWP. It's $790 some odd. I said, this is never going to repeat ever again.
David Omen laying down the law to the spirits that they are not to raise ruckus and run up his electrical bill. Ghost of Cielo Drive tonight, the afterlife of Sharon Tate and the spirits of the Omen House. Ghostsofcielodrive.com, theomenhouse.com, houseattheendofthedrive.com. We'll be back with David Omen right after this.
Into the Paranormal is streaming 24/7 on the TuneIn Radio app and at ParanormalRadio.com. Location nearly as top secret as Area 51. Yeah, and if you believe that, you'll really like this show. Into the Paranormal.
David Omen, my guest, Ghosts of Cielo Drive tonight, and here he is after the spirits have run amok and they're playing with his electrical devices, I'm guessing, and running up his electrical bill. Here is David laying down the law and telling them, hey, look, knock it off. I'm serious.
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, what happened was is I called them out on it and I was furious. I said, this is never going to happen again. I said, I swear to God, I'm furious. I mean, financially, I didn't have the money and the wherewithal to spend $800 on an electric bill. That just wasn't factored in my budget. So I was like, how dare you sock it to me in the wallet? You know where it hurts. You know what offends me and pisses me off, and does scare me. Okay, that scares me. Bills scare me. Ghosts? No. Bills? You bet your ass. So I took an umbrage with the spirits and I said, "This is it." And I went on a very, very, very unexplored route. And what I mean is I decided that I would treat them like they were unseen house guests. And how would I treat a house guest that was living here, that was a person and dealing with this, came across like this? I said, listen here. If it wasn't for my mother and my father and me and my sister, you'd have nothing. This was a bare, naked hillside, just like I pointed to the property next door, which was vacant at the time. And I said, just like that empty piece of land next door. If it wasn't for us, and they said, until us, and we've taken the time to build this, we gave you 4,200 square feet of prime real estate and a house to go hang out and play in. Last I checked, you certainly aren't paying rent and aren't paying the mortgage, and that's enough right there. But when you cross the line and you start jerking my electric bill and doing it in the past prior 2 months, I already seen the reasons why the electric bill got popped. There were televisions being turned on in the middle of the night, lights going on in the middle of the night in different parts of the house. They popped the resistor on one of the GFIs, which is a ground, I think it's called a ground, GFI stands for ground facilitated intermittent, meaning that you have to put these plugs near a water outlet. So if their water would just splash into the outlet and short it out, it automatically switches and it breakers off. It has a little breaker switch on, so you have to push it in and reset it. And that's mandatory. So they had done that to the wall unit where the telephone answering machine hooks up. And I didn't find this out till 5 hours, 3 hours later when I got a call on my cell phone. They said, hey, your telephone at home is out. You know that? I'm going, what? So I went to the answering machine. The answering machine's not turned on because they popped the receptacle in the plug and it was dead. So I was like, okay. So I fast forward to the moment of dealing with the spirits. I said, you guys don't wear pants. And because you don't wear pants, you don't have a back pocket. And because you don't have a back pocket, you don't have a wallet in that back pocket. And if you don't have a wallet in that back pocket, there's no cash in that wallet in that back pocket to pay for this bill. And since I'm the only one here wearing the goddamn pants, I'm stuck with this bill. How goddamn rude and obnoxious. This cannot happen anymore. I said, we have got to lay down some ground rules. And I said, in the famous words of Rodney King, can't we all get along together? And I swear to God, that's exactly what I did. I said, we can't. You can appear as an apparition like Jay did, but you cannot be a disembodied body part floating around. You can't just sit there and manifest as a gory apparition. I said, that won't be appreciated. Nothing like that. I said, we can't have you guys sit there and scaring the pants out of people that are visiting. That's just not going to happen. I said, if you want to manifest, you do it in a very, very subtle, easy to deal with way. We can deal with it. Just don't try to freak us out over it. And I said, you know, we can all get along. I don't have a problem with you guys. I said, I've been here for enough years that you guys don't bother me in the slightest. I like you guys. I appreciate you being here. I don't have a problem with giving you a safe place to hang out. I said, I like the fact that you're here. You've never shown me any disrespect till now. And if this is some kind of a prank, it's a one-off. And people, when I tell the story, look at me like I'm strange. And I said, what else? Then I said to them, as the threat, which was the capstone I forgot to mention. I said, and if you guys decide to disavow my offer, I said, if you decide to totally run roughshod on this and I get another bill like this ever again, so help me God, I will get the world's greatest psychics, mediums, exorcists, and whoever the hell I have to get you guys flushed down the drain and out of this house. I said, you will be banished. And whether or not I truly believe that in my heart, at the moment when I said it with conviction, and I meant it. Ask me how many times since that incident, that many years ago, that's ever happened again.
I would guess none, and so I would say that they listened quite well.
Well, look, I didn't come to this point off the bat. It was gradual. It was like the old saying is, I didn't go out and start beating the crap out of the gosh darn rug until I couldn't get it vacuumed 15 times. I used a rug doctor. Then I had to take it out of the house, and I'd go to the extreme lengths of beating it with a broom to clean it out. What I'm saying to you is it was the last resort. It was the straw that broke the camel's back. I had already gone through years of them locking the bathroom door on the top floor and hearing the laughter throughout the house as I had to run back to the kitchen to grab a butter knife to pop the lock on the gosh darn bathroom door. You know, it just was something that I said, you know, all right, this fun and games time is over. We can't do this anymore. This is the last straw. If you do this anymore, you've now crossed the line. And I threw it down like a gauntlet. And people said, how did it work? I said, well, so far it's been fine. I haven't had any issues like that ever again. I do have the faucets turn on by themselves when they want to, by the spirit's own hands. I've had things move around. But as I call them, as I speak about them, I call them parlor tricks because they're not poltergeist actions. A poltergeist activity would be something a lot more substantial and a lot more aggressive and forceful than just knocking a glass of wine over or knocking a figurine over or sliding a sock across the floor on its own. Those things are just attempts to communicate, saying, hi, we're here. We're not trying to freak you out, but in some way or shape or form, we reached out to let you know we're around. And I'm always embraceful of it. I'm always embracing it, saying, thank you. That was cool. That was so cool. I love it. Got any more tricks? I mean, because in the honest to God's truth, their energy, you cannot think that you as a human being have the capacity and the power to manipulate and move energy like they are. We don't. Our frail human being bodies and minds have a difficult time accepting the unknown and leaving it alone and accepting it as an unknown and respecting it. That's something humans aren't exactly good at doing. You can see how many different species of animals have gone extinct in the humanity's lifetime, okay? When it comes to respect, humanity has not exactly got a great track record with that word. And that's the truth. And that's why kind of people have a difficult time dealing with spirits because they're demanding. They want it on their terms. There's not a mutual understanding of respect and appreciation and acceptance and, you know, trying to deal with it. It's a matter of we're better than you. We're humans. We can control you. We can do whatever we – yeah, yeah. Go walk on the freaking face of the moon all you like. You don't have the wherewithal for all the universe's questions, and you'll never, ever have the answers. So that's where we have to start to accept your place in the universe and understand that we are not, repeat, we are not the center of existence in the universe.
Yeah, and these spirits are not going to act upon our wish or our command either.
No, they're not servants unto us to do our bidding. Sorry. That's good for television, films, and crappy books and movies, etc., the likings of The Conjuring, but no, that's myth and boring bunk. Doesn't exist.
So, David,
the idea that a human being can say something in Latin and make a ghost dance or leave? Good luck with a Hindu spirit that goes, I do not speak this language. I do not understand ancient Latin, and I do not give a damn about these people. Goodbye. Boop. My point.
David, you're cracking me up.
I ain't to please and entertain.
Go back and tell us, if you wouldn't mind, about what the construction workers were experiencing, after you purchased it and, you know, it was being built, and some of the stories that happened.
Let's see. Well, during construction, I can tell you three recollections. My own would be that when we put up the first floor, which is the third floor from the street going down level, and even as we built, you know, I'd be walking around the floor with none of the walls up or anything, and I could just feel like somebody was going to come up behind me and tap me on the shoulder, and I turn around right before I got tapped on the shoulder, so I thought, to find no one there. It was like a presence, like somebody was right behind you and they were thinking, they wanted to ask you a question, but they couldn't ask you a question because they figured, you know, you were too busy. And they were just hanging around right behind you, just waiting to ask you, but they never did ask. That kind of feeling. My laborers would complain that objects or tools would go from one floor to another. So like when they left at 5 o'clock, they would leave all their, some of the tools in the third level in one of the closets. They came back and some of the tools weren't in the closet. So they asked me, David, were you here last night after we closed up and moved? And I said, why would I come back late night, which I might have, but why would I go out of my way to take tools out of a room in a closet and put them into another room? I said, no, I didn't do that. And then the best story was 6 months before we were done, I assembled my contract laborers that were building the rough shell of the house. When we started doing the finishing, we had to get the marble company and the stone company to come in with the stone cutters and all the cabinets and stuff had to be put in. So that was all on the finishing side of it. So we're about to finish with the first, you know, the contract laborers. And I said to them, look, guys, you've been on this site for over 2 years. Has anybody had any weird experiences during construction? And one guy said, yeah. I said, tell me. He goes, well, 6 months ago in the middle of summer, I'm on the third floor working, and it's about 5:30, 6 o'clock, and everybody else is gone, and I'm the last one working, and I hear voices and footsteps coming from the top floor. I said, yeah? He goes, I run upstairs to see if it's you and your dad, and there's no one there. I said, huh? He goes, yeah, you know, the walls are all up. And I said, so I don't know what the hell's going on. So I go out in the street and I look around and the street's empty. And I said, gee, it's 6 o'clock. I've been up there at 6 o'clock after you guys have all left. And yeah, there's not a single car up here in the middle of summer. Everybody comes back home at about 7 o'clock. And he said, yeah, that's what I didn't understand. I thought somebody was on the, you know, was out from one of the neighbors was coming over to check on the house, but there was no one there. So he says, I go back downstairs, and 5 minutes later, I hear the voices and the footsteps again from the top floor. So I run up there as fast as I can. I start looking around, and I go through the entire floor, and there's nothing there. I go through the second floor this time to look around. Nothing there. So he says, I think I've had enough. He goes back downstairs, and he starts packing up his bags. And as he says, he starts hearing the sound of footsteps coming down the spiral staircase. And at the time, the staircase was installed, but there were only 2x12-inch treads, which were 2x12 board that was literally just sitting in the framing of the spiral staircase. So he says, and it sounded like leather-soled shoes hitting the wood. And he said it didn't sound like tennis shoes because he knows the sound of the tennis shoes, but a couple of the guys have leather-soled shoes that they wear to work, and you can hear the sounds on the wood, and it makes a distinct sound. He said the sounds of coming started coming down the staircase, and they got louder and louder till they stopped. And it felt, he figured it was at the bottom of the landing where they stopped. So he rushes out from the bedroom next door to the theater room, which is now the theater room, and he looks at the landing, and he's like 10 feet away from the opening there, and he goes, there's nothing there. There's no one there. He goes, and then it hits him. This ice-cold, isolated type of a breeze, as he describes it, which is really not really a breeze. He described it more like an ice cube. 2-inch-wide band of ice comes whizzing across the back of his neck, below the hairline, above his shoulder blades. He says it was so strange that his whole body got rigid and all the hairs on his body stood straight up, and he screamed, Adios mios, adios mios, llame boy, llame boy. Which translated from Spanish means, oh my God, I'm leaving, I'm leaving. And he took off and he didn't come back for 6 weeks. I said, wait, that's when you told the other guys you were taking care of your sick mother in San Salvador, right? And he goes, uh-huh. I said, where were you? He goes, I was working other jobs. I was terrified. I didn't want to come back. I said, so wait, you did come back? He goes, yeah, I did. He goes, because I realized I didn't get paid for the prior 3 weeks of working there. And I'm like, oh my God. I said, I remember this because you were the guy that was putting in the tiles in the bathrooms, and you were just about to start doing the tiles in the master bathroom, and you took off. And he goes, yep. I said, I remember I waited for 2 weeks, and I kept saying, when's he coming back? When's he coming back? And they kept on bullshitting and telling me they don't know. At the beginning of the third week, I said, that's it. I'm frustrated. I can't wait any longer. I'm going to do it myself. And I did. What a mistake. Because I had seen him put in the tiles and all the rest of the house and the bathrooms, the kitchen. And I said, oh, I can do that. No, I can't, as it turns out. It's a lot more complicated to slap on some grout and the cement to adhere the tiles to the floor and to come up with the idea that if you're dealing with natural stone tile, and there's a natural pattern in the tile, you got to lay out the tile first and figure out the pattern like a jigsaw puzzle instead of taking them out one at a time haphazardly and putting them into the freaking ground, into the floor, and then realizing after you're done saying, what the hell did I do? Because the natural pattern has the veins in the rock that's naturally occurring. You're trying to like match one to the other to get this kind of a pattern, making a nice little pattern all the way through. Oh, no, 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 no. Not in the master bathroom. You have one with a striation going to the left next to another tile where it's going from the upper left corner going down the opposite way. And it's like, oh, my God. It's like mishmash hodgepodge. And that's just the patterning. We're now going to talk about the height. Some of the tiles are a little taller than others. Some are a little closer than others. It's like, yeah, if you ever want to leave your mark that you did something and you're not qualified to do it and you still do it and you're being, you know, egocentric and you want to leave a mark, that's the way to leave a mark. And I've got it in my house. So when people say, oh, I don't believe this story about the contract labor, I said, look, come with me. Come with me into the bowels of my bedroom and go look at the bathroom and look at the tile. And you look at the rest of the house and you look at the kitchen tile and you look at the other bath and you look at mine and you go, what the hell happened here? It doesn't look as good and polished. And this is the master bedroom where the master bath is supposed to be the cornerstone and the jewel of the house's bathrooms. Not exactly in my house. So needless to say, the story is quite real and true.
And yet it's never really crossed your mind that maybe maybe building this house in this particular location is not a good idea.
No, because no one – let's start from scratch. No one lived here. And theoretically, at the time, as we understood it, no one died here. And when you buy somebody else's house and plenty before them have lived in, you're talking about layers upon layers upon layers of history that go into that home. And even if they tear the home down, the layers of that history are still embedded in that area, in that energy field, in what once was. And I've seen it before in other locations where I've been to where they tore the house down. Yeah, that's great. But the house that was there before still has a connected memory and a recollection to those that were there then. And they can come back at any time in the history when they're dead, to visit that which was once their familiar haunt or home. So to me, it was like, what, I'm afraid of some spirits in here? No. Again, there spirits are everywhere on the planet. This place has just got more of them concentrated. But that's not to say that the areas that you guys live in aren't floated with spirits and activity, because spirits are just those energies that have of people that have left the earth and left this plane of existence, and they're coming back to visit their old familiar places, be it a place they worked, be it a place they lived, be it a place they played or fell in love or whatever. It doesn't matter, or died like Gettysburg or some other battlefield. These are places that they're returning to check up on to see how it looks. That's all. And there's nothing we can do about it again as a human being. It's not in our capabilities to do things like that, which we don't understand.
We'll come back with David Oman talking the ghosts of Cielo Drive tonight. It's that house 150 feet from the Tate murder house, where in 1969, Sharon Tate and four others were brutally murdered by the Manson family. And here we are 50 years later talking about it with David Oman, who's right there in the middle of it. I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest.
Make sure to subscribe to Into the Paranormal's free YouTube channel for shows, news, and exclusive reports. sensor button here. Just don't tell YouTube. You're traveling to the paranormal with Jeremy Scott.
Inevitably, I did get a message during our last break. Are you going to play any of David's EVPs from his YouTube page? You read our minds. We are going to play some of those. David's got all sorts of clips and videos of investigations about crazy stuff that has happened. It's all documented up on his YouTube page. So we got a couple of clips that David has hand-selected here from his channel that I want to play here for us. The first one I'm just going to play right out of the box. Let the audience listen for themselves, preferably with headphones, as we discussed last night. Headphones are probably going to bring you the best results, although these are clear as well. And as David and I discussed off air, there really is no interpretation here. You should be able to hear it, so we'll play it, and then we'll have David tell us what we heard and give us some background on it, and then we'll hear it looped so we can really hear it in its entirety. Here we go. That's the original recording. So is it a spirit saying the same thing twice?
Three times. Yes. As a matter of fact, it was, I think it was 2 years ago in the summer. I was in my bedroom. I went to bed about 3 a.m. and I said out loud, I said, spirits. I said, I haven't seen your ass around here in some 12 years, Jay. Where are you? I said, why don't you come back and pay us a visit? It's been so long since you manifested. And to be honest with you, you're the first spirit I ever seen, Jay. So come on back and visit sometime. And I was jesting and joking and son of a gun. 8 a.m, I wake up. I'm still in bed sleeping and I'm rustling in bed. And I hear this voice said, I'm here. And I'm like, all right, I heard that. So about 5 minutes later, I said, I got to find out, look and see, check what time it that was so I can review the footage on the cameras. So I look and it says 8:05. It's like, all right, 8 o'clock, fine. I go back to bed. An hour later, I get up and I go into the office and I start to review the footage. And you hear that three times the son of a gun said, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. And I was like, oh boy, son of a gun. That had to be Jay. Who else is coming to visit after I said that to him?
Exactly. And here you're going to hear it if you listen very carefully, quite a few times looped. So we heard the three, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, and then we heard that looped three times. So you heard nine instances of I'm here in that 22-second clip right there, a voice that we believe to be Jay Sebring.
And what's interesting is people said, well, it was modulated and modified. It's like, no, that is the original. That is the original recording from the CCTV camera without any modulation, without any dropping the, what is it, dropping the white noise or all that crap that they do and sweetening it, as they say. There was no sweetening done on that video, on that audio. And that comes with video.
And I explained last night how, as an audio technician, I can pull an audio file and look at its waveform and be able to tell whether there's any manipulation or whether it's raw audio. There certainly was some background noise in there, which if it was edited, that probably would have been isolated or removed. The fact that it is not and that there is that background noise there tells to me it's an authentic clip. And also you mentioned, modulation or volume. Sometimes you do have to do that because the spirit is not necessarily coming through at the same volume that the human is, especially when we're asking a question. The response is many times softer than the original question.
Exactly. It doesn't seem to be the case at all with these spirits. They control their modulation quite well, and it's amazing. Like I said, and I'm not, as you say, I'm not overtly going out and going ghost hunting. This is stuff that's just happening on a regular basis. During daily regular, sleeping. I mean, I'm not going out to ghost hunting in my sleep, but the fact is that they're communicating and letting us know that they're leaving a message. I don't think that had I heard it and responded and said, okay, who's here, that I necessarily would have had a response saying, oh, it's Jay. How are you doing? I'm just waking you up. I'm sorry. I don't believe that type of an interactive communication would have taken place. I think he was just saying, I'm here, and that's it. Goodbye.
All right, so we're going to hear another one, which is graphic. It is going to say a not-so-nice word at the beginning. Oh, actually, the second word's not very a nice word either. Both of these are not-so-nice words, David.
Yeah, but they're not, again, graphic would be something like, I'm going to gut your throat and cut your guts out and let them spill on the floor.
Well, I say graphic because some people just don't appreciate that language, so I want to give people...
It's vulgar, yes, but it's not graphic. I think it's vulgar in the sense that it's like two curse words, one that's the ultimate curse word, which we all know, and the other one is a curse word describing a...
Fair enough. We're not hearing a blood-curdling scream in the background, so you're bringing me a little bit back to reality. It's more vulgar than it is graphic. I will agree with you on that.
So if you do it again...
Okay, I did increase the audio on the response there because in this case it was lower and it was hard to hear, but you could hear David asking the original question, which we'll play again.
So if you do it again...
So there was a question that preceded that, and then you, I think, said, I have to do it again. What was the original question?
The setup was that I was having an investigation that evening, and I was doing a karaoke session to loosen up 2 hours before anybody was arriving. So I was reviewing the footage on the camera to see about the karaoke session that I just laid down.
You have to warm up the voice for your karaoke sessions?
I was actually just warming up my head to get myself into a frame of, it was relaxing. I was just in a bad space at the time before I had the investigation. I want to clear my head and kind of shake it off. And I said, what can I do to get out of this funk I'm feeling right now? It's like, sing, do some karaoke. What the hell? So what I did was I flipped the switch on to the camera in my office, which doesn't run, but when I actuate it and turn it on, and it didn't cycle on. So I said, I have to do it again, meaning I had to redo my karaoke session so it would be recorded because the camera wasn't activated. So that's what I was saying, I have to do it again. It's like, and then you hear the voice say effing pricks. And I'm like, okay, when I heard that on the replay, I said, all right, guys, I heard what you said. Now, you were very, very clear in what you said, and you specifically said pricks, plural. Now, I'm here alone. No one's here, so you weren't referring to me. So question, who the heck were you referring to? Who are these people you don't like that you're calling fucking pricks? Please tell me. Give me a sign. I'm listening. I'm waiting. Please. Never got a response. But the point was that it happened.
And to hear, you'll hear it looped. There you go. Clear as day, if you ask me, as far as EVPs are concerned. David Omen with us here of the Omen House. He's written the book Ghosts of Cielo Drive, The Afterlife of Sharon Tate, and The Spirits of the Omen House. Did you have an encounter with Miss Tate?
I have yet to see her apparition. A friend of mine whose first time here was 15 years ago on the 35th anniversary actually saw Sharon's apparition and thought it was my girlfriend. And I kid you not, this woman's first visit here, she comes into the house. I had just said, hi, I'm David. I got to go outside. Make yourself at home. Have a seat. So she's sitting in the kitchen or in the dining room. And she says that when we came in from outside taking care of putting up the wires for the investigation, she says, oh, David, I just saw your girlfriend. And I go, what? And, of course, I didn't say it. I didn't sit there and blurt out all the information to give it away, because I basically said, what did you see? I didn't act all like, oh, my God. Blah, blah. I just said, what did you see? She goes, well, I saw this girl, blonde hair. She was probably about 5'6", 5'7". And she's in a white sundress, and it's probably about mid-thigh. And she's attractive, and she's walking around. She acts like she's acting like she owns the place. She walks from your den around the bar and down the stairs and went downstairs. And I looked at her and said, are you positive? And she didn't know anything about the house and location. We didn't tell her because I said there was no point in telling her the specifics because I wanted her to be coming in completely in the dark. So I said to her, I said, well, there's a little problem. I said, my girlfriend is 5'11", 6 foot. She's got straight brown hair. She doesn't like ghosts. She doesn't believe in ghosts. And that's why she is not here tonight. So I said, whoever you saw wasn't a person. I said, wasn't a living person. I said, because meantime, the only people here is you, me, Rob Ludowski, and Ludowski, and another friend of theirs, and we were all outside. Except for you and Ann, who were in the kitchen, and Ann was in the kitchen, and you were in the dining room, there was no one else in the house. And she couldn't believe it. And she swears to this day of what she saw. And the physical description was identical to that of Sharon Tate.
All righty, now we're going to hear our final clip of the evening, and this was actually just recorded a couple of days ago. I think you know the one I'm talking about.
Right, it was a week ago, as a matter of fact, Tuesday.
And you were doing an investigation?
Yeah, JoJo Wright from KIIS-FM, KISS FM in L.A. and around the country, was out here to do a scouting on my request because he was going to be doing a show here on the 29th, 2 days before Halloween. And I said, you should come to the house and experience it for yourself, since I don't want you coming in here, you know, raw from never being here before and then having a bad experience with the place and then feeling like you got to cut your show short. I said, it's always better to get acclimated to this environment if you're coming back later on to do something in the future. I said, so he comes over with his friend, Marcus, and they had strange stuff happen. We had a UCLA stuffed Bruin bear doll. It's like about 12 inches tall, get knocked off of the shelf in the theater room by itself, which is only the second time that's ever happened here in the house. And then we went upstairs to review the footage. When we were going up to the second floor from the third floor, we got to the second floor landing and all three of us stopped dead in our tracks because we all heard something. What's interesting is we all three didn't hear the same sound. I heard a voice. The two of them heard a sound of a door slamming. And I said, all right, doesn't matter. There's a camera right above our heads, right here where we're standing. Let's go review the footage on that first. We review the footage and there's a voice or a sound of a something growling. And then right after that, there's a sound of a woman's voice or a man's voice saying, Carissa. And it says, Carissa. You don't hear the A at the end of Carissa, but the fact is that 3 days earlier, I had a couple of people here from the Dr. Phil show. And the Dr. Phil show's producers, one of them was named Carissa. And you can listen to it. This is probably one of not the greatest disembodied voices recorded, but it's pretty darn clear.
Well, let's see if I capture it here on the clip. If not, we might need to expand to get the whole thing. But here's what I've got at this point.
Happening. Yes. Happening. Yes. Happening. Yes. Happening.
There it is. You hear it. It says, Carissa. Carissa. He goes, Anthony. And then you hear that voice that's none of us whispering, saying, Carissa. But the A is literally cut off by somebody else speaking over it.
Happening. Yes. Happening. Yes. Happening. Yes. Happening.
And you hear at the end of it something like a clapboard clapping. That wasn't anything that we heard, unless that was the sound of the door slamming that both Marcus and JoJo said they heard.
I thought I heard something different in that. I thought I heard yes, sir. But I could see it the other way, and I think it depends on how you train your mind. So if I'm gonna play it again, and I'm gonna think Carissa, and because I did a mind experiment on this one time of a clip that you play and you think is something, and depending on what you think, it says that. It's a real experiment. I can send you the link and blow your mind if you want, David. But I'm gonna play it again just for my own personal benefit. I'm gonna think Carissa.
Happening. Yes. Happening. Yes. Happening. Yes. Happening.
Okay.
You do hear a door slam. That's the door slam that JoJo's hearing. That crash right at the end of that statement. It goes Carissa, and it goes crash, like something's being slammed shut.
Wow. David, what is probably the best or the creepiest? Maybe those are two different.
No. The best was from my birthday 3 or 4 years ago. I had a party here. And, of course, you know, there are people that I'm not interested in the party. I want to go ghost hunting. I'm at David's house. And I'm like, fine, go downstairs, go to the garage, John, you know, go investigate. I said, I'm not going to stop you from doing what you're hell-bent on doing. So my four friends went downstairs to the guest bedroom, and there were two couples, and they're sitting there on the bed talking, and one of the guys says, I ain't afraid of no ghosts. They don't scare me. And I laughed, and I said, oh, really? And sure enough, the spirit says, hello, what are you doing in my bedroom? And then this little kid's piano keyboard starts playing on its own right next to them. They freaked out. The girl screams. And it's the craziest gosh darn thing. It's like, are you serious? You screamed like that? Why? And it's funny because they recorded on their digital recorder and on the camera in the room, we heard the same thing. And it's this old man. And I first got upset seeing this old man's acting like he owns the place. I said, wait a second. Perception, turn it to a little bit off center and say, wait, maybe the spirit's saying, what are you doing in my bedroom? Because why aren't you upstairs at the party, you stinking bastards? It's his birthday. You should be up in his bed upstairs, not in my bedroom. And I said, maybe that's what he intended to say, and we didn't hear the rest of it.
Now, what do you believe happened the night of August 8th, 1969? Have you been able to glean information from these spirits who are obviously on your property?
Yes and no. I mean, I put it this way. To ask somebody, what happened the night you died? Can you give me a glimpse into the – you got to remember, their perception of what happened was limited to their point of view because they were involved in it. They weren't sitting on a stool, or I should say on a ladder above it, watching it all unfold like a director in a movie. They were literally they were the participants in. So for their perceptions were limited to what they only saw themselves. I mean, I've gotten some information about the murders and the gruesomeness and stuff, and some of the facts that I've come up with, you know, are actually proven to be factually right there on the paper, so to speak. And what I'm talking about is, you know, Sharon and Jay's body, their bodies were moved from inside the house to outside the house. It's hardly discussed and hardly mentioned how physically that happened. And it's kind of, I don't understand why people, you know, harp on most insignificant, infinitesimally insignificant pieces about the murders, when this piece I'm talking about is very valid and important. Meaning, somebody came to the house between 1:30 and 2 in the morning and moved Sharon and Jay's body into the backyard, and then brought them back in the house and dress set them and posed them in the positions they were found in by the police the following morning. Nobody likes to talk about it. Nobody really gets into discussing it. But the only problem is it's the biggest red herring of the whole gosh darn murders that doesn't make sense, that nobody figures that there's a necessity to discuss that. And from what I've heard is that Manson and an accomplice came back to the murder scene after the murders and moved Sharon and Jay's body. They stopped at the front door because they were heavier than they anticipated, and they were dead weight, literally. So part of their blood, both Sharon and Jay's, pooled out of their body and made a pool on the front doorstep. Then in the backyard, there's bloodstain evidence that leads to a spot in the middle of the backyard where there was no bodies. The blood only matched Jen and Jay's blood type. People want to say that Charlie Manson wasn't there, blah, 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 and he was guiltless, he was innocent. Problem is he was there. He moved their bodies. He and his accomplice moved Jen and Jay's body into the backyard because he wanted to set him up in a pseudo-sexual position, because he was making a statement by returning them back in the house and putting the rope over the rafters and then attaching one end to Sharon's body and the other end wrapped around Jay Sebring's body, which was making the statement that it was Sebring's baby, not Polanski's baby, that Sharon was taking to full term.
Has it been hard for you to learn this information, David?
I wouldn't say it's been hard. It's been a lot of responsibility to maintain, to keep their memory alive and be more of a mouthpiece for their memory than anything else. Because as I keep feeling for them, they got the short end of the stick. Their lives, which were in perfect form ahead of them, were cut short. And to this day, they're known, not only are they disrespected in the fact that it's called the Manson murders, Manson wasn't there. I mean, Manson wasn't killed. So why we call it the Manson murders when it was Sharon Tate who died makes no sense. It's not the Tate LaBianca murders. Sharon Tate had nothing and no connection to Rosemary and Lena LaBianca. That's not to diminish their importance and their death and their passings. What I'm saying to you is that the convenience of the publicity and the news and the media have created this dynamic where it's like Tate LaBianca. Tate LaBianca is the name of the trial that Manson was basically put up against when in 1970. Tate LaBianca were two separate murders on two separate nights in two separate locations with two different sets of individuals that were killed, having nothing to do with one another outside of the fact that they were both committed by the same perpetrators. I feel like they don't really like the fact that they have been played in such a way that their memories have been diminished. And even this year, especially with all the different motion pictures, each one taking their shot at retelling the story, but each one of them botching it up in a worse way than the last. And I know people don't want to hear this, but let's be honest. The Haunting of Sharon Tate was completely exploitive in several different fashions by repeating the murders from several different viewpoints, which is going back to the perception of, you know, from Abigail Folger's, you know, experiences in the murders is not the same as Sharon Tate's. So that's what they did in that movie. In Quentin's movie, they decided to give her life again and breathe life into her character, which is great. I appreciate that. But what I don't think the spirits were totally appreciative of was the disrespectful way that their demise were dismissed and comic book created wise. I mean, it's great and dandy if you want to take a story of Cinderella and make it a fairy tale. It is a fairy tale. But you can't, in my estimation, and their feelings are, you don't do that to a tragedy of this proportion and take half of it and then leave the other half away and change the whole dynamic of what took place because it's disrespectful. You might have a dream of wishing that they were, let's start from this. If that was your dream, then maybe you should have fictionalized the names of the people and not use these historically accurate, these portrayals of these people, because what you've done is you've left a whole generation with a perception of what happened then that didn't happen, that's not accurate, that leads them to think that the story in that movie, because it's half fact and half fictional, is the real story. And that somehow Sharon's still alive at the age of 76 years old and her kid's 50 years old. That's my point. I don't hold anything against Quentin. I think he's a great director. I'm just telling you my personal what I've ascertained long before the movie was even being shot about the movie was that it's another disrespectful slap in the face to their memory.
So I would recommend that you go see David's House at the End of the Drive, houseattheendofthedrive.com, the website, theomanhouse.com, ghostsofclodrive.com, author of Ghosts of Cielo Drive, The Afterlife of Sharon Tate, and The Spirits of the Omen House. Thank you so much, David. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you. Thank you for having me on, as always. That's a pleasure.
David Omen. We'll talk to you next time on Into the Paranormal. I'm Jeremy Scott.